You're listening to Augmented Humanity. Our guests are modern explorers working at the intersection of technology and the humanities. They help us to understand ourselves and the worlds we create in this digital age. They are thinkers, creators, makers, and academics working in diverse fields like civics and government, the law, anthropology, and archaeology. I'm your host, Craig Goldsmith.
I'm your host, Ellen Dornan.
On this program, we're joined by Rabbi Harry Rosenfeld, the rabbi at Congregation Albert in Albuquerque, and the Reverend Bob LaValle, a minister at the First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque, two religious communities that have moved completely online during the pandemic.
We've been talking a little bit about regular worship and life cycle events, but a lot of people only set foot in a house of worship on holidays.
Really? I didn't know that. I'm surprised.
Imagine.
Some big holidays have passed in the pandemic, and there's big ones coming up. How does that look when you do either your congregational celebrations, minor holidays? How have you adjusted that?
Well, at First Unitarian, a worship service is a worship service. Our big holidays in the liturgical calendar, and you know, some are just another Sunday. So we haven't had to adjust a lot because we have our online services down well. But there are certain things that were important in the life of the church that we've tried to figure out more creative ways. Like the blessing of the backpacks was a ritual that we used to really enjoy. And so we actually did it as a drive-through.
What is the blessing of the backpacks? What is the significance there?
Children bring their backpacks and also adults, and they receive a blessing for their work and their learning. It's very touching. We set up a drive-through with different stations, and Reverend Angela and I were out there in our stoles, in our robes with masks on, 6 feet apart, and people would drive up in their cars and roll down their windows, and we'd stand by the window and give our blessings, and we had squirt guns, and we would squirt gun into the car, and then run around the car and squirt on the car, and it was pretty goofy. We had a big balloon arch, and pretty joyous. And the next station would be our director of religious education, and her staff would safely pass on a tray a little token related to the church and then send folks along. And we actually had another station where there was like a speaker with danceable music playing, and we'd invite people to stop the car, get out of the car and dance, and then get back into the car and leave. When our beloved ministerial intern, Jane Davis, left after 2 great years, we couldn't have the party that we would have had. So we arranged a drive-by of her house. And people made signs and plastered them on their cars. We probably had 60 cars going by the house. And not the same, but it is something.
For us at Congregation Albert, it has been a fascinating journey. Because the first holiday that came along was Passover. And I had this brilliant idea. I still think it's brilliant, even though pretty much everyone hated it. We always have a Seder, a Passover meal at the synagogue on the second night. And instead of doing that this year, I thought it would be a great idea if we sent out links to Seders across the world and people could experience a Seder in Israel or Morocco, Costa Rica, Australia. Most of them were recorded and available someplace. And I just thought that was a brilliant idea. And it's the only thing that we have done or not done, as the case may be, that people really, really disliked. So now we're trying to figure out what to do for this year, because it's not going to be that. For Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, as I said earlier, we were in the synagogue. We thought it was important. Cantor Finn and I were inside on the bima, on the pulpit, and we were each 20 feet apart. We each had cameras focused on us. And on the side of the chuppah that was between us, we asked the staff to put up a visqueen, clear plastic. And the first thing they did was hang drop cloths. And we were like, no, it has to be clear so we can see each other, because that's very important. We got actually a good amount of feedback that it was nice to see the sanctuary. For Sukkot, we did do a drive-through. Sukkot's the holiday of booths. And so we had the custodians build a booth that spanned the driveway. I mean, it was huge. And I did the evening, and Cantor Finn did the morning, and we stood there with the ritual objects, the lulav and the etrog, and we shook them like you're supposed to, and people drove through. And we were obviously masked, and we were more than 6 feet away from the car. It was interesting to see people had masks on, and other people didn't. I was really surprised. But even the people who had masks, it was so gratifying to at least see half their face in person. I mean, really. And then we had the whole rest of our staff there, and we had prepared gift bags for everybody. You know, a piece of fruit, some liturgy, and some learning, and whatever. And so those got handed out, and people loved that. We have since planned two others. One was for Thanksgiving, and the governor shut everything down, and we decided, even though technically we could have done it, that it wouldn't have been right to do that. And then the second one was supposed to be for Tu B'Shvat, which is an outdoor holiday, planting of trees. And normally we take people and we all go down to the bosque and plant trees. But this year, obviously, we couldn't. And so we planned a drive-through. And unfortunately, one of our staff members tested positive for COVID. And so we had to cancel that one also. So those drive-throughs are just not working for us. The interesting one will be, I retire this year. I retire technically June 30th. And so the first full weekend in May is my goodbye weekend. And it's going to be entirely virtual. And for me, that's great. Perfectly happy with that. The introvert in me is so happy about that. And my colleague who I had asked to come in to speak will do it virtually. Everything will be virtual. The Saturday night party will be virtual. I don't know what they have planned yet, but I'm just glad it's not in person. But unfortunately, they're also planning a drive-through. So I would expect a serious surge of COVID right before then, and the governor's going to have to shut down the state again.
Because that's been the track record.
That's our track record.
The huge price that we've paid in the pandemic is the loss of singing together. And we quickly realized that you can't sing together on Zoom. It's horrible. And our poor music director, Susan Peck, who fundamentally sees her work as facilitating the act of people making music together, and she's a genius at her job. And she has done an absolutely amazing job from this place where she just had the rug pulled out from under her to really embracing the technology. And she wasn't necessarily that techie. And all these technologies, these applications are coming out that allow people to record tracks separately, and then she can mix them with the video. We actually get to see people's faces while they're singing together and harmonizing. And that's amazing. And it's a ton of work for her. But it's not the same as let's rise together and lift our voices, which of course is exactly the wrong behavior for COVID. It's exactly how you have a super spreader event.
We did some of that for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur with our choir. A lot of synagogues across the country for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur pre-recorded everything and just broadcast it. And I didn't want to do that. I wanted the spontaneity and all that kind of stuff. I'm always going to make a mistake. And I think it humanizes the experience for everybody. But we did have recordings. Recordings of the choir, recordings of people doing blessings. And then because we did some and it was all music, we felt okay to add a couple of, with licensing, performances by famous musicians who had appropriate songs. And that was nice.
Isn't it amazing the tangible difference between a live and recorded performance?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. For the recordings we showed, we used live performances that we could find online and license.
During our last coming of age, normally the youth do little mini homilies, little 3-minute homilies. So we had to do them on video. And one of them submitted a video of him playing his drums with a voiceover. We would never have been able to do that in the sanctuary. And it was really cool, really effective.
If you're at your house, you know, in a Zoom meeting, you're looking at the regular Zoom gallery view or whatever it may be on your computer. When you're at the synagogue, Rabbi, do you have like a projection screen?
No, that's part of what I've been fighting for 10 years to get. We have put up screens in the past for high holidays and sometimes for just regular Shabbat Sabbath services, but it blocks so much of the pulpit area that I don't think it's really worth it to do it until we can actually get real technology in there.
When you were doing the high holiday services, you weren't seeing who was participating. Did you have cardboard cutouts of nobody that pays their dues?
We thought about it. You know, we have a number of stuffed toys from when we were kids, and my wife brought one, put it in the seat next to her, because the other people who were there with us were both of our spouses. And, you know, the way we had it set up was our tech people behind the cameras, where we could still see it, was a screen that was showing what was being broadcast. And the problem with that is you can't do gallery view. That's only speaker view. So I had my cell phone and or my iPad up there on my lectern, and I was using that in gallery view on Zoom so I could see people. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been able to see anybody. And as unsatisfying, as I said, as it is to only have people's faces online, it would have been so much worse without even that.
Yeah, otherwise it's like you're just talking to an empty room and trying to muster that energy.
Not like trying to talk to an empty room. It was talking to an empty room.
I'm curious, you know, with all the choreography and figuring out music and figuring out what you can do over Zoom and what matters, how have you all adjusted your services? Bob, a little earlier you were talking about opening up more for people to share their blessings and their concerns. So that was an adjustment of the service. But were there things that you've had to give up because it's too impractical to try and create it as a virtual experience or to do it from home?
A lot of it goes back to first principles, like what is the purpose of a religious community and what is the purpose of the worship service? You know, for us, it's a place for consolation, for community, a place to receive guidance and a place to be inspired to live into that guidance, you know. And then when the pandemic began, Angela and I very specifically said our work during this time is three things: connection, engagement, and resilience. So everything we were doing had to feed that and give us direction. As Unitarian Universalists, we have a lot of freedom with our liturgy. So we could tinker with things. It's still important for us to think about the arc of the service and how the different parts connect and carry through. Thinking back to the pre-pandemic live services, I'm having a hard time remembering them in some ways. Like, it just feels like I've been doing this forever now. How's it been for you, Rabbi?
I don't know. It's strange. The whole thing is just strange.
It really is strange.
One of the things, we consciously made an effort to shorten the service, which, you know, if we ever do go back to in-person services, I think people are going to expect, and I don't know if they'll be disappointed. There are certain parts of the service that we did change significantly, like the reading from the Torah scroll. I share a screen of the text online over Zoom, and I read it that way. I did bring a Torah scroll home a few times, but my space isn't really conducive to putting in another table. I did it for a few weeks and just wasn't working for me or others. Other changes we made are really kind of painful, like the not singing together. I have, on a couple of occasions, unmuted everybody so that we could hear that cacophony, but it was in an appropriate moment to do that. We've even done that for some of the readings, like Mourner's Kaddish. So we've done that a few times to create that sense of community. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That's all fine. I, however, am convinced there's no going back from this. This was coming anyhow, and the pandemic just sped it up.
We're absolutely committed to continuing an online live presence. We've actually had more than 30 folks join First Unitarians since we went online, and they're from all over the place, and we're not going to leave those folks behind. So going hybrid, that's going to be a thing.
So I don't like the word hybrid. I mean, I don't understand it in this context. I read just yesterday a blog post by Cantor Rosalie Will about going hybrid. And she asked some really important questions in her blog about it. Are you just going to broadcast your service, right? You're going to be up in your worship space and just have cameras on everybody. Or are you going to create separate worship experiences, one for those who are in person and one for those who are online? And it's easier to design. What does that do to the sense of community? Now, there are lots of synagogues, lots of churches, lots of other religious organizations that have multiple services during the course of a day, right? Oftentimes that's for space use, but, you know, in front of churches, traditional service at 9 o'clock, modern service at 11. So there are some different styles of services that people do at different times. I just don't know what would be best. And someone asked me why I'm retiring, and not joking about it, I know it's time to retire because I see what I'm pretty sure the future will be and what's needed in the coming decades. I don't know how to get there. And I've been doing this for 40 years, and it's not like I don't have the experience and I don't have the skill sets. You know, like Bob, you did that internship for 2 years online.
Yeah, but we actually tried during my internship, I'm going to use the word hybrid, no offense, Rabbi Eric, to simultaneously do online live worship with in-person worship at our sibling church in Portland. And it was really, really, really hard. So do we want it to be like a Saturday Night Live kind of situation where there is a studio audience in the room that's providing the laugh track, but the real audience is the ones watching on TV? And I think the studio audience has a less of an experience. I mean, we're committed to it, but we got a lot of questions. I think it's going to be very volunteer and gear intensive to do both well. Yeah.
Yes.
I never want to lose the accessibility that we have now. Not only just folks who have different kinds of financial situation that doesn't allow them to come to church or a disability, but one thing I'm seeing, folks with marginalized identities traditionally are more comfortable coming to an online service. They feel safer coming to an online service. We're a multicultural congregation, but we are predominantly white and middle class, upper middle class. And just walking into that room and seeing the overwhelming culture of it, it makes it hard for people to access the spiritual place. But if someone is trans or a person of color, and when they come into church live, they're bracing for the microaggression, well, they can go to live church, but they're protected from that.
Rabbi Rosenfeld, Reverend Bob, thank you so much for being with us today. If you would like more information about either of these communities, you can visit Congregation Albert at congregationalbert.org online, and the First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque at uuabq.com. Augmented Humanity is a program of the New Mexico Humanities Council, produced in partnership with KUNM-FM. You can visit us online and find out more about our programs at nmhumanities.org. Our theme music comes courtesy James Whiten, and we've had production assistance from Tristan Klum.